ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Chapter 11, Text 19. Anadi madhyantam ananta viryam ananta bahum shashi surya netram pashyami twam dita hutasha bhaktram svatejasa vishvamidanta pantam. This is Arjuna speaking. Bhagavad Gita means what is spoken or sung by Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But in between there are parts spoken by others also. So this verse which we're about to read is spoken by Arjuna in praise of Krishna. And he is describing Krishna, "You are without origin, middle or end. Your glory is unlimited. You have numberless arms, and the sun and moon are your eyes. I see you with blazing fire coming forth from your mouth, burning this entire universe by your own radiance." Purport by Srila Prabhupada. "There is no limit to the extent of the six opulences of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Here and in many other places there is repetition, but according to the scriptures, repetition of the glories of Krishna is not a literary weakness. It is said that at a time of bewilderment or wonder or of great ecstasy, statements are repeated over and over. That is not a flaw." Arjuna is describing Krishna. I'm also supposed to be describing Krishna. You've come here to hear about Krishna, isn't it? We're reading Bhagavad Gita. Why? Why don't we read the Times of India or India Today? We want to read Bhagavad Gita as it is, because we want to hear about Krishna from the pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada, just as Arjuna describes Krishna. Krishna is being described by Arjuna. You are without origin, middle or end. Your glory is unlimited. So it's difficult to understand Krishna, isn't it? There's no beginning or middle or end. And His glory is unlimited. Just like with any ordinary person, we can say, "When were you born? When were you born? Which year?" 1981. Was it? So now you're in the middle of your life, somewhere in the early middle. And there will be an end, you'll see. Mahatma Gandhi, born which year? Who's good at history? Anyone? 1869, and died in 1947, 48. So, beginning, middle, and end. And Mahatma Gandhi is considered a glorious person, but not unlimitedly glorious. But Krishna has no beginning or middle or end. We can say, well, he was born from Devaki, but not really. Because as he describes here in Bhagavad Gita, "Ajo pisan avyayatma bhutanam ishvaro pisan prakritim svam adhishtaya sambhavami atma mayaya." I'm not born, Krishna says. I appear to be born, but actually I am avyaya atma. It means that Krishna's body and soul are non-different. Krishna never dies and he's never born. He appears within our vision and goes away, and according to human calculation it appears to be like birth and death, but it's not. He appears by His own wish, by His own energy. His glories are unlimited. You cannot measure them. There are so many words in the dictionary, but even the best of poets, if they combine all these words in the best of ways, they cannot fully describe the glories of Krishna. The best poet is Vyasadeva, or all the Vaishnava acharyas, they are great poets. Brahma, he's also a Vaishnava poet. He has described Krishna in so many ways. Advaita Machujam Anadyam Ananta Rupam Adyam Purana Purusham Navayovanamcha. He's describing Krishna that he's not divided. He's not broken up. He's everywhere. He is Advaita. This is the proper understanding of Advaita, that everything is Krishna. But he's not divided. He's one person, but he's everywhere simultaneously. And he is Achyuta. This is a name that Arjuna calls Krishna. Krishna, in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna calls Krishna by many different names. So one name is Achyuta, means that Krishna never falls down. He's never bewildered. Arjuna is bewildered. He doesn't know what he's supposed to do. He is Kim Kartavya Vimurha. What should I do? What is my duty? He's bewildered. But Krishna never becomes bewildered. Even though Krishna appears within this material world, he is never bewildered by this material world. He is Anadi. There is no origin of Krishna. Sometimes people say, well, if God is the origin of everything, then what is the origin of God? But it's a self-defeating question. Because if anyone has any origin, then he's not God. So Krishna is the origin of everything. And Ananta Rupam, he has many, many forms, but still he is the one Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is Rama, Nrsimha, Varaha, Kurma, Paramatma within everyone's heart. He expands himself in so many forms as the deity. Here in Udupi, Madhvacharya worshipped Krishna. We just went, we were fortunate to have darshan. Today he's in, this evening in Rukmini Vish. That same Krishna was worshipped by Devaki in Dwaraka. And we'll find throughout India there are so many forms of Krishna. Someone gave me today a picture of the deity of Ananta Padmanabha in Tiruvananthapuram. Here in South India especially, Balaji Srinivas, very famous. Who's been for darshan at Tirupati? Not so many. Mostly gone to Udupi. Not so far from here is Guru Vayarapan, another form of the Lord, Krishna. Then there's so many. In North India there's Srinathji at Nathdwara. Jagannath in Puri. So like this, there's so many forms of Krishna. Dwarakadish, Badrinath. So Krishna expands himself in innumerable forms, but still he's one person. This is not very easy to understand. His glories are unlimited, and our brain power is limited. Those who are studying in Manipal, they may think, well, I'm very brainy, I've got a good brain. But it doesn't matter how good your brain is not sufficient to understand Krishna. Einstein didn't even begin to understand Krishna. He didn't have a clue. Never heard of Krishna. So unfortunate. So how shall we find out about Krishna? If Krishna is unlimitedly wonderful, and we have such limited ability to understand, how shall we find out about Krishna? We can find out about Krishna by hearing about Krishna from the proper source. Arjuna is the right person to describe Krishna because he is a pure devotee of Krishna. Srila Prabhupada is the right person to describe Krishna because he is a pure devotee of Krishna. If we hear about Krishna from non-devotees, then we'll get the wrong idea or some mixed up idea. Practically everyone in India has heard of Krishna, but not many people properly know about Krishna. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvatah tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mameti sojan. By understanding about Krishna, his janma, so-called janma, his appearance in this world, and his karma, his activities. If one understands these properly, then simply by understanding this, one becomes free from repeated birth and death and goes to Krishna. But there are not many people who properly understand Krishna. There are many, many people who go to temples for darshan of Krishna. It seems like today many people are doing Satya Narayan Puja. So there's some idea of Krishna, but not very clear understanding. Generally people are not very interested to know seriously about Krishna. But our relationship with Krishna is the vital factor of our existence. What's most important in this world? What do you think? Getting lots of money? What if you got 5,000 crores of rupees? How about that? Who would like 5,000 crores of rupees? I'm not going to give it to you, but I'm just answering theoretically. I don't have it myself. If you were given 5,000 crores of rupees, but on one condition, you never speak to anyone ever again in your life. And no one will ever speak to you, and you'll never see anyone. Solitary confinement. You can sit in a room with piles of rupees stacked up. Would that be very nice? You can talk to the bundles of money. They won't talk back. You won't be happy. Or if you have a very big, among the men, big, very strong body, like they show on the outside of the gymnasium. Or for the women, very beautiful body. But all you can do is look in the mirror. Someone will doom just by magic, give you a very strong, healthy body, but you're not allowed to talk to them ever. You can just look in the mirror and enjoy looking at your healthy body. So any material facility that we get, that won't actually make us happy. Without sharing with others, without relationships, there's no happiness in this world. But our real permanent relationship is with Krishna. Relationships in this world, they simply cause distress. Because we expect that we will have nice relationships with others, but a lot of the time they're not. And those relationships are broken by time. By death. At the latest, each relationship is broken by death. But relationship with Krishna is unlimited, because Krishna is unlimited. Krishna can reciprocate love to an unlimited extent. There's no limit to how much Krishna will love us. And that love is not, people think, well, just like Satyanarayan Puja. They're doing Satyanarayan Puja. So they think we will get many facilities, we will get material facilities. But Krishna's love, the real love is not how much gold and good health and all these things he gives us. But it's how much we share a loving relationship with him. There's the famous story of Sudama. That's a common name in Karnataka, isn't it? Many parents call their male child Sudama. In Tamil Nadu, they say Kuchala. He was Krishna's schoolmate. Just a few days in Ujjain, he visited the site of the ashram of Sandipani Muni. Who knows who Sandipani Muni was? Anyone can say? I know, you know. But let's see if anyone else knows. Who? Krishna's teacher. So Krishna is, what does it say there? Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru. Gurum. Krishna is the teacher of the whole world. But one way he teaches us is to take a teacher, to show that we all need a teacher. So Krishna's teacher was Sandipani Muni. And his best friend at school was Sudama. So there's so many stories told how Krishna and Sudama, they went in the forest to bring firewood and they got caught in the storm. Anyway, later Krishna became known as Dwarkadish, the most opulent prince of Dwarka. And Sudama was living little distance from there, the present town of Porbandar in Gujarat. And he was very poor. Krishna was very rich and Sudama was very poor. Very, very poor. But he didn't care because he was detached from this world. He didn't care for any material opulence. But his wife cared. She said, hey, this is so poor. Why don't you go and visit Krishna? He's your friend. He's so rich. He'll give you something. So he didn't want to take anything from Krishna. But he thought, yeah, let me go and visit Krishna, my friend. Let me go and see him. So he went to visit Krishna by walking, of course. Those days, going anywhere meant by walking. So he went there and he wasn't thinking, I'm going to beg so many things from Krishna. He never thought like that. He just remembered, oh, my good friend Krishna. He was simply absorbed in love of Krishna. So eventually he reached Dwarka and he looked very strange there because everyone in Dwarka was very wealthy and very well fed and wearing very nice clothes. And Sudama was very skinny with his bones showing and very poor clothes and not looking very rich at all. But he didn't care, he didn't even notice. Because he was simply thinking, I'm so fortunate to visit Krishna. So he visited Krishna and they had a very nice exchange. Krishna worshipped him as a brahmana and they exchanged stories. Do you remember in our childhood we were living together in the ashram of Sandipani Muni? So in this way, the whole night passed and then Sudama left. And he forgot, his wife sent him to beg, because a brahmana can beg from a king. So he was supposed to beg some charity, he completely forgot. He was just absorbed in, oh, I'm so lucky to be with Krishna. He completely forgot to beg anything and he came back. And he never thought, oh, I should have begged something. He was just thinking, I'm so fortunate to have seen Krishna. But anyway, when he came back, he couldn't recognize There was a big palace on his grounds. So nowadays it might be that some rich contractor, they clear out all the poor people and they build a big palace. But that was actually Krishna's arrangement. Krishna, Sudama never asked for any material opulence, but Krishna automatically arranged big palace just to please his wife. But Sudama, he didn't think, oh, now I'm very fortunate. He thought, I'm very fortunate because I saw Krishna. And now there's this big palace. All right, before I was thinking of Krishna in a little hut, and now there's all this facility so I can worship Krishna very nicely. He never thought how I will enjoy this. So the pure devotees, they are absorbed in love of Krishna, and Krishna can reciprocate unlimitedly. But devotees, they never ask for any material facility from Krishna. They simply want to reciprocate with Krishna in love. That is bhakti. So we should hear about Krishna from the devotees. Sudama can tell us who is Krishna. Sudama will tell us, Krishna is my friend. If we ask Sudama about Krishna, he will not say, oh, he's a very rich king. He is a very rich king, and Sudama knows that. But Sudama simply thinks, he is my friend. If we ask Arjuna about Krishna, he'll also say, Krishna is my friend. But here at the present time, Arjuna is seeing the universal form, the Vishvarupa of Krishna, and he's amazed at Krishna's greatness. So actually this is the way we have to understand Krishna. Krishna is our friend, but in the beginning we should understand what is Krishna's greatness. Because if we simply say Krishna is my friend, we'll think, well, you know, this is my friend, and Krishna is just another friend. We have to understand how great Krishna is. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna describes to Arjuna how great he, Krishna, is. He describes that because we need to understand. Because in this material world, we are in illusion thinking, I am great. This is our illusion. But actually Krishna is great and we are dependent upon him. And not understanding the greatness of Krishna and our dependence upon him is the cause of our being in this material world and suffering in forgetfulness of Krishna. So we should hear about Krishna from those who know how to guide us and teach us about the greatness of Krishna. We should not try to learn about Krishna from non-devotees or partial devotees. If we try to learn about Krishna from the TV Mahabharata show, we won't learn, we won't properly understand, because the people who are playing in the drama, they themselves don't know. For them it's a job, that's all. Or if we try to learn about Krishna from Amara Chitra Katha, we also won't learn about Krishna, because the Amara Chitra Katha, that's made for profit motive also. They don't go very deep. They tell some stories, but not very deeply. Or you may think, I won't bother reading Bhagavad Gita, it's too big a job. It's a very big book. Okay, so I'll just put on my wall one Gita Sar. Have you seen this? They have that in Canada also. This so-called Gita Sar. Jobi hua wo acha tha, or Jobi hora hai wo acha hai, or Jobi hoga wo bhi acha hoga. This so-called Gita Sar, which has got actually nothing to do with anything Krishna said in Bhagavad Gita. Because I think the people who made this Gita Sar, they also never read Bhagavad Gita. Probably someone was drunk one time and he made this up. Just whatever came out of his head when he was drunk. Because it's got nothing to do with Bhagavad Gita. Absolutely nothing. It doesn't make any sense, even materially, what to speak of spiritually. Sab kuch jo tha wo acha tha. So if we say that, you know, 20 people died in a bus crash, oh, acha tha. Very good. It's nonsense. It's rubbish. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, dukhalayam ashashvata. This material world is full of misery. He doesn't say that everything is good. He says everything in this material world is simply a cause of suffering. So how can they say that the Gita Sar is that everything is good? So we have to, that's why you may think, well, this is such a big book. It's not very big if we have to understand Krishna. How big is Krishna? How unlimited is Krishna? This is only a tiny little introduction to understand Krishna. If you take all the libraries in the world and fill all the shelves with books describing the glories of Krishna, there's no end to the discussion of Krishna's glories. But we are lazy. That is one symptom of Kali Yuga, that we're lazy. We expect everything instantly. Instant coffee, fast food, don't bother cooking, just go buy a pizza from the fast food cafe, whatever it is. Everything instant. But fast food is not nourishing, you know that? If you only eat fast food, you'll get fast visit to the doctor. Anything valuable, we have to invest some time and energy. So if we want to understand Krishna, we have to make some effort. Right? Isn't it? You can't think that, well, I won't do any bhakti, I won't do any sadhana, and I'll come to the temple once a week and take the Charanamrita, that's finished. That's good to do that. That's something. Better than nothing. But just like if you're studying, you want to be a doctor, so you come to Manipal to study. If you just come to the college once a week and smile at the professor, will you pass? The professor might think, well, it's nice he's smiling at me. At least he's not throwing a bomb at me. But that won't help you to pass. You have to make the effort. So, Krishna has very kindly come to this world and spoken to Arjuna about his glories. And we can take advantage of hearing about the glories of Krishna from Bhagavad Gita as it is. But we have to do it. People say, I have no time. We have time for so many other things. We have to put time aside for understanding Krishna. Understanding Krishna is not simply an academic process, however. Certainly, if we are to understand Krishna, we will have to understand him as he describes himself in Bhagavad Gita. But it's not that simply by studying that one can understand Krishna. Not simply by studying. One has to apply it in one's life also. It's just like you can't become a doctor just by reading medical books. One has to take guidance. Practical guidance also. Just like if someone offers to do, now I have a heart problem, someone offers to do surgery cheap. Only 2,000 rupees, certainly. Say, well, that's very cheap. Do you know you're a surgeon? You say, well, I read a book on surgery. So what would you rather do? Spend 2 lakhs or two and go to a real surgeon? Or spend 2,000 rupees and have a special operation with guaranteed result, which will be that your next journey will be to the smashan. What do you want? Cheap 2,000 rupees. Your relatives might want that. But obviously one who just read the book, they're not qualified. You have to take proper training. And even if you have very good theoretical knowledge, you still won't be admitted as a surgeon unless you've been personally trained by a qualified surgeon. And actually there'll be a team of them who they'll guide and they'll take you. They'll show you again and again and again. And then, all right, you do this simple, slowly, slowly. It's a very serious thing. So only when they're fully convinced that this person is qualified will they allow you to perform surgery. You'll get the certificate that you yourself can do it. Because they have to maintain their own prestige also. If they admit you as a surgeon and you're just a bungler who kills everyone that comes in, then their own name will go down also. So to maintain the good name of bhakti, those who are devotees, those who are true devotees, they don't make it very cheap. You may say, why don't we make it easy? What's all? You see, when we come to ISKCON, you have to follow all these rules. No meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex, no intoxication. Chant at least 16 rounds. Why don't we make it easy? But the point is that this Krishna consciousness, it is very valuable and very pure. And some qualification is required for that. Just like to be a surgeon, you may say, why don't you make it easy? You can have, you know, 7-day course. You don't know anything about medicine. You know, you never even studied biology. You don't know what a cell is. And within 7 days, we're going to make you a surgeon. Is it possible? No. So, some proper training and qualification is required. But the result of doing that is one gains something very valuable. I'm giving the example of being a surgeon, well, that's something considered valuable in human society. But far more valuable is that knowledge by which one becomes free from birth and death, one becomes fully aware of Krishna, and one becomes able to help others also become free from birth and death and knowledgeable of Krishna. This is the highest knowledge. There is no knowledge in comparison with this. Krishna's glories are unlimited, but he is so kind that he makes himself available to us, even though we are our intelligence. And our ability to understand is very limited. But Krishna kindly makes himself available to us. But we have to be serious enough to take up the process of Krishna consciousness so that we can become qualified to understand Krishna. So Krishna is unlimited. But he makes himself available to us. He showed his Vishwarup to Arjuna, and he reveals himself in this Kali Yuga to everyone who is willing to accept him, to the devotees, by the process of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. By chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. By chanting this mantra, under proper guidance, seriously endeavoring in devotional service, Krishna will reveal himself to us. This is the promise of Bhagavad Gita. Tesham Satatra Yuktanam Hajatam Priti Purvakam Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yenamam Upriyanti Te. That was another thing we were seeing today. Bhagavad, what was that? Bhagavan Ki Pratigya. This is his promise. I didn't see anything like that. There's another, they never read Bhagavad Gita, people who made that. But this is his promise, that those who are always engaged in my service, Krishna says, with priti, with affection, I give them the intelligence by which they come to me. His pratigya is there, famous verse, at the end of Bhagavad Gita, his promise. Nanmana bhava madhakto madhyaji mang namaskuru mame vaishasi satyante pratijana priyosime. Krishna says, always think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me and bow down to me. In this way you will certainly come to me. I promise you this because you are my dear friend. Krishna says to Arjuna. Hare Krishna. There's about 20 minutes before the arati. So in that time, if anyone has any questions, then please ask. Krishna is unlimited. So you can't know everything about Krishna. So if there are any questions about the subject, I can try to answer. I don't know everything. Who knows everything about Krishna? No one will say they know everything. But I've had some training in the science of Krishna. So I can, as I have heard, yatha shrutam, I can attempt to reply. So, any questions? No question. Everyone understands everything. Is it? All right. Well, if there's no question, then we can chant Hare Krishna some more. If you have a question. All right. Please state it. What is the importance of taking initiation? Well, in one lecture, was it a lecture that Prabhupada said that those who don't take initiation, they are vagabonds. There are so many. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saying, Dikka kale bhakta kare atta samarpan, shei kale krishna tare kare atta sam. That diksha means the activity of self-surrender. And at that time, Krishna accepts a person as good as himself. Ashraya loya bhaje, Krishna tare nahi tyaje. Arshab more akaram, Narottam Das says, that those who worship Krishna by taking shelter of the devotees, Krishna never rejects them. Others are simply live and die useless. In Bhagavad Gita itself, Lord Krishna says, Tadvithi pranipatena, pariprashnena, sevaya, upadekshyanti te jnanam, jnaninas tattva-darshinaha. That one should approach those who are tattva-darshi, those who are seers of the truth, with humility, bowing down, asking relevant questions, and serving, and upadekshyanti. This literally means they initiate into the spiritual knowledge. So that system's been going on since time immemorial in all paramparas of diksha. It's only recently that someone invented some philosophy that there's no need to take any diksha. It's quite prominent in Bangalore, so it's here we're quite close to Bangalore, so this speculation is a little prominent in this area. Actually, it's there also in the Sikh religion. That after Guru Gobind Singh, they had 9 gurus, and after Guru Gobind Singh, they said, no more gurus, and we just worship the Granth. That's all. So they do, they worship the Granth, but they don't read it, you know, they don't know what's in it. So that's there also in Sikhism. But if you want to be a Sikh, I suppose, you could follow that. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which Srila Prabhupada called the law book of devotional service, these 64 bhakti angas or processes of bhakti are given. So the first one is Atag Guru Padashrayam. First of all, one should take shelter of the lotus feet of a guru. And then, Krishna Diksha Anu Shikshana. Number 2 is one should take Diksha and then Shiksha. And what's the next one? Susu Shu Guru Seva Anam. Vishram Mena Guru Seva. Sorry. One should with much affection serve the Guru. So of the 64 items of bhakti given by Rupa Goswami, the first 4 are in relationship with Guru. And number 2 there is to take diksha. So if someone says you don't have to take diksha, well, you can tell them, well, you're not following Rupa Goswami. You're not Rupa Noga. Not following Rupa Goswami. No. No? A lot of paths have been shown to attain nirvana. Which ones? Lord Buddha has spoken of nirvana, yeah. That's true. Mahavir Jain. Is it? He speaks of nirvana. He uses that word. I don't know. I haven't studied Jainism.
How is it different from what we are
following? From what we are following. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna gives the essence of Vedic knowledge. The word nirvana is there in Bhagavad Gita also. Brahma nirvana. Nirvana means cessation of material existence. So Lord Buddha spoke of nirvana, cessation of material existence. But he did not give information about positive spiritual existence. Lord Buddha taught, as Krishna speaks in Bhagavad Gita, that this material world is miserable. So Lord Buddha, he spoke of becoming... Actually, Lord Buddha's philosophy is very difficult to understand because he says that ultimately everything is nothing. It's very difficult to conceptualize. But anyway, his philosophy is to get... The idea is that this world is full of suffering and one should get free from that. That is called nirvana. Even though you don't exist, ultimately, according to Lord Buddha, still you should try. Although some Buddhist schools say you shouldn't try. It just happens automatically. Don't try for nirvana. It just happens. Just boom, like that. So it's freedom from material miseries, but what is the positive side? There's no information there. Krishna conscious means to give information of positive information of spiritual bliss in service to Krishna. Everything in the material world is miserable and everything in the spiritual world is simply blissful. So if we say, well, Everything material is miserable, so we'll just stop doing anything. So that means to come from the negative position to the zero position. But we have to come to the positive position. The positive position is service to Krishna. In spiritual bliss. Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. So this is giving positive information about what happens after we get free from material suffering. What is there to do? We are Atma. The nature of the Atma is conscious. So we cannot just do nothing. That's why it's very difficult, this meditation. They say, simply empty your mind. Has anyone ever tried to do that? Sit and empty your mind. Is it possible to do? As soon as the mind is empty, you're dead, actually. Because if there's no thought, then you're dead. Because the mind is always active. So, as Lord Krishna says, Manmana, think of me. Instead of thinking of things that will entangle us in this material world, think of Krishna. That is purifying. If we think of different things that I can enjoy for my sense enjoyment, that is contaminating, that is binding in the material world. But if we think of Krishna, we become free from material bondage and we become blissful. Because Krishna is all blissful.
When we speak of freedom from the cycle of death and birth, so can it be attained only in human life?
Can freedom from the cycle of birth and death be attained only in human life? Generally, yes. It may be that an Atma who is in an animal body may, by the special mercy of the Lord, be freed from birth and death, just like we have in the Puranas, in Srimad Bhagavatam, the story of Gajendra, who was an elephant. Actually, he was a great muni in a previous life, Indradyumna Raja, who by curse became in the body of an elephant, and Lord Vishnu delivered him in that situation. But generally it's human life. Labdvasu durlabhamidam bahu sambhavante. Manusham. Hear that word? Manusham. Artadam anityam api hadhira. Turnam yatetan apated anumitya yava nisrayasaya vishaya kalu sarvatasya. Lord Krishna states that we have attained this human life after many, many births. And although human life is temporary, it is very valuable. Because in human life, we have the opportunity to get free from birth and death. We have the opportunity to attain the highest benefit. Therefore, one who is intelligent, they should not waste the human life. But before inevitable death, which will come soon, we should cultivate that consciousness by which we will not have to get born again. And Lord Krishna says, all in one short slope, you see, Sanskrit is more compact. And if you say in English, it becomes very long. And if we think that, well, I should enjoy myself, why don't we enjoy ourselves? Why don't we jump on a motorbike and roll around Manipal making a big noise and stop at the Pizza Hut and eat some pizza? We think, let me enjoy myself. But we've already tried for that in so many lives. Sense enjoyment is available in every life. Sex enjoyment, the dogs have it, the cats have it, the camels have it. There's no camels in Manipal. In other parts of India, there are camels. The pigs, the pigeons, they have a lot of facility for sale. So all this enjoyment, eating food, that's, the animals are also enjoying. The camel likes to eat thorns. Have you seen that? Who's from camel country? Gujarat, Rajasthan, anyone? You see camels? They eat like this. They like to eat thorns. They'll put their head up in the thorn tree and take the branch and chew. You know why? Because it cuts their tongue and they like the flavor of their own blood. That sounds pretty stupid, doesn't it? But that's what we're doing in the human life also. We are using our body, we're pushing it to get so-called enjoyment. And simply causing harm to ourselves. So enjoyment is there in every species of life. Even the cockroach thinks I'm happy. But human life is meant for God realization. So take it seriously. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear anything. Could you say it more loudly? There's a lot of echo also. The mood of a devotee. Is it possible to have the same mood all the time? Well, when we talk about the mood of a devotee, that means his general attitude. Within that, there are various sub-moods. This is that book I was saying, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. There's Thaiba, his general mood, just like Yashoda Mai, her general mood toward Krishna. She thinks, I'm the mother of Krishna. But then sometimes she's holding him in her lap, and sometimes she's chasing him with a stick. So the mood changes. But the basic mood stays the same. The feeling of protecting Krishna. So the general mood of a devotee is called Sharanagati. That I am, what is that? Amita toma tumito ama ki kaj apar dhan. Bhaktivinoda Thakura summarizes this. That in the relationship to Krishna, the devotee thinks, I am yours and you are mine. What do I need? Anyone else is anything. So his relationship is with Krishna. But within that, there are sub-moods also. It's not that just a devotee is like a machine. He may be sometimes angry, sometimes laughing, all kinds of different moods. But the basic mood remains the same. The mood that I have to serve Krishna. Krishna is my... What is that mood? Sharanagati. That is, anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya vajanam rakshishyati ti vishvaso gopritve varanam tatha atma nikshepa karpanye sharavidha sharanagati. That mood of a devotee is summarized in six categories. That he only wants to do things which will improve my... which is pleasing to Krishna. And he never wants to do anything which is displeasing to Krishna. And is fully confident that Krishna will protect and maintain me. And his mood is of full surrender to Krishna. And at the same time, very humble. So that's the summary of a mood of a devotee. You like to be like that? Or the modern day, they're promoting the Asuric Bhav. I don't care for anyone. I just do what I want to do. This is the Asuric Bhav. Well, it's almost time according to this one. Any other question? Yeah. Why do we stress on the personal form of Krishna? Because the personal form of Krishna is the supreme absolute truth. That's why. You read it in what? Tales of Jagannath. What's that? It's an ISKCON publication. Who wrote it? Anyway, if anyone gave you, if in any way you have an impression that Krishna is not the Supreme Absolute Truth, you're wrong. Wherever you got it from. We stress on the personal form of Krishna because the personal form of Krishna is the Supreme Absolute Truth. There's nothing beyond that, as he states in Bhagavad Gita, that mataparataram nanyat kinchid asti. There's nothing beyond me. That's why we stress on the personal form of Krishna. That is the highest realization. If you don't like that, then you're a demon, according to Bhagavad Gita. You're a fool. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that, what is that? Avyakto vyak, what is that verse? Avyakto vyaktyat. Avyaktam vyaktim apanam manyante mama buddhaya. Those who think that the personal form of Krishna comes from the unmanifest, they are, according to Krishna, the word he uses is abuddhayaha, which means damn fool number one in simple English. So, I didn't say it, Krishna said it. If you don't believe me, argue with Krishna. But you don't have to argue with Krishna, he'll just keep you in this material world as long as you like, until you recognize that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's not only you, it's everyone else in the material world who's affected by the mentality of not accepting Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's why we're all getting born and dying then. And simply we have to accept Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and no more birth and death. But most of us don't want to accept because we're... So, someone had some questions?
In the practice of Krishna consciousness, people are hurted by this. It's mandatory to listen to them or can go with
Krishna. Sorry, you're saying when you're practicing Krishna consciousness, some people are hurt?
Those who don't know that they are Krishna.
You mean some people, they don't like you doing that?
Yes, and even ordinary people.
They protest. Definitely if we take to Krishna Bhakti, not everyone will agree. But if we listen to them, then we don't get the benefit of performing Bhakti. Mostly people will say, why are you spoiling your life? Why are you wasting your time? Why do you believe all this? Yeah, to take up Krishna Bhakti, it means to take a different path to that which most people are taking. We have to be ready for that. Prahlad Maharaj is the example of one who is in an atmosphere totally against bhakti, but he stuck to it. So, we can't think that if we do bhakti that everyone will agree and... Yeah, but then we have to satisfy Krishna. So you have to be prepared for that. Some people will say it's very bad, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't waste your time. You're anti-social. They'll say so many things. It's unfortunate. In India, where this is known as Punya Bhumi, but people are very interested to make it into Papa Bhumi. If anyone wants to do Punya, then they protest. So, modern Indians, they've become more like Hiranyakashipu than Prahlad. Really? All propaganda is how to become a demon, forgetful of Krishna. Can you imagine if in the press and the media there was as much encouragement for Krishna Bhakti as there is for materialistic life, what the atmosphere would be? People would take it up very naturally, isn't it? Naturally, people in India are inclined to this, but the whole propaganda is how to become totally materialistic and sinful. As a Vaishnava, if people call you to other demigods' puja, We worship Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. People worship various demigods for material benefits, so we don't take part in that. We don't disrespect demigods. They're part and parcel of Krishna. They're Krishna's representatives within this world. So you could go and bow your head down, or if we're passing some temple, we may go in and offer respect, but we don't take part in any elaborate puja or anything like that. Just we'll offer respect. That's all. There are various mantras that we can chant for various demigods in relation to Krishna. Just like if we go to a temple of Lord Shiva, then there's a prayer, Shiranyatadadivikaravisheshayogat sanjayatena hitatafkatagasli heto ya shambhutam apitatasavabhaitikarya govindam adi purusham tamaham vajami. It's actually praising Govinda, but it describes Shambhu, his position in relation to Govinda. You know this prayer? It's from Brahma Samhita. It's a well-known prayer. So like that, if you go to a Shiva temple, this prayer says that, it compares Lord Shiva just like milk is converted into yogurt. Yogurt is non-different from milk, but it is a transformation of milk, which has different, it's only milk, but it has different properties. So in the same way, this example is given that Lord Shiva, in one sense, he's non-different from Vishnu, but he has different qualities. So like that. There are different prayers you can learn for offering respect when you visit demigod temples. But we're not going to sit for 1 hour, 2 hours in a demigod puja for some materialistic benefit, which we're not interested in anyway. Even this Satyanarayan puja is going on. We don't attend that. They're worshipping Narayan, but in the wrong way. They're not worshipping for bhakti. It's materialistic. So we don't take part in that. Yeah, then? He feels like that, but that doesn't mean that because he feels like that, that Ganesh is supreme. There's a story like that, that Lord Jagannath revealed himself as Ganesh. But it still doesn't mean that Ganesh is supreme. No, but Krishna is not Ganesh.
Yeah, but some people like him as a child, some people like him as a...
That's one thing, but Krishna as a baby is Krishna. Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra is Krishna. But Ganesh is not Krishna. He's a servant of Krishna. We have to understand Bhagavad Gita. We have to understand Krishna explains himself in Bhagavad Gita. We can't understand Krishna from folk stories. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Kamaistaya Pitagyana Prapadyantena Devataha. People worship different gods because their knowledge is spoiled by material desires. He doesn't recommend any god worship.
Say that people who don't worship Krishna,
they
are demons. The Muslims say...
No, we don't say that. But... Well, you're saying that the demigod worshippers, they may or may not be demons. There are different categories. There are different categories of demons. Yeah.
But scriptures, when we talk about scriptures, the Muslims, they also say that people who don't worship Allah, they are demons, and we are demons. What is the difference?
Then you study and see. What is the knowledge of God given in Vedic scripture? What is the knowledge of God given in other scriptures? There's a difference. 2 + 2 = 4, that's a mathematical truth in the beginning class. But that doesn't mean that's all of mathematics. If you just study 2 plus 2 equals 4, you may say you know something about arithmetic. That doesn't mean you know everything. So, just like that, in various religious processes, they may accept that God is supreme, and they think, well, that's it. That's all. We don't need to know anything. They say you can't know anything more, but there is so much more information about our relationship of love with Him, which is described in the Vedic literatures. But in other religious systems, they strongly deny that there's even any personality of God. Then how can you love Him if there's no personality? So they have some basic knowledge that there is God who is in control, but they don't have further knowledge and they don't want to go beyond that. And they insist that that's all in all. So why should we accept that? If there's higher knowledge, then go higher. Yeah, then? Hare Krishna, please go on chanting. Are you reading Srila Prabhupada's books? Do you have Srila Prabhupada's books? You have to read them. You don't have Bhagavad Gita as it is? Don't have this. You have to read it. If we're doing bhakti, we have to know what we're doing, why we're doing anything. We have to know why we're doing it. Otherwise, how can we continue? We're doing activities just like you were saying, people will oppose that. So what will you say? You have to know this philosophy. So please get Bhagavad Gita as it is and read it. Take the trouble to read it. That will help you. There are many books, Science of Self-Realization, that's also very good as an introductory book. So reading is essential. Many times we stress chanting, which is true, but we have to understand the philosophy also. Otherwise we won't be able to sustain up chanting, or we won't even know why we're chanting. So chanting is essential, but understanding this philosophy is also essential. Otherwise we'll remain confused. If people condemn you when you try to tell them about Krishna, then don't try to tell them. Then don't try to tell them. If they're so demoniac, they have no interest in hearing about Krishna and they simply condemn you for speaking about Krishna, then better don't speak to them. Give them a little prasad, show them Prabhupada's books, ask them to take it. But there's no use to try to preach to people who are so much inimical. Of course, if one is an expert preacher, then he may be able to preach to the uninterested and inimical also. But that requires further knowledge and advancement and maturity in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, if they're a little bit inclined, you can invite them to the programs here. They can come and hear. But if they're so much inimical, then what to do? Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommended for the common people that we should go out and we should perform kirtan. Let the people hear. They'll become purified by that. If they're not prepared to hear the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, let them hear the holy names and they'll gradually become purified by that.
Swami Prabhupada in one of his books was talking to a Christian priest. He asked him that why do Christians eat meat when it is clearly mentioned in the Bible that thou shalt not eat.
Thou shalt not kill.
So,
Cardinal Danielo, the head of the Catholic Church in France,
Prabhupada was speaking to
them. He told them that don't kill cow, eat lower animals like goat and beef.
You can, if you like, eat goat and sheep. You'll get a karmic reaction for doing. You'll get the sinful reaction for doing so, but it's not as severe as the sinful reaction for eating cows. So it wasn't that Prabhupada was saying, yes, we highly encourage you to eat mutton. It wasn't like that. It is saying that if you're so addicted to sinful activities of eating meat, then at least don't eat cow's meat. Save yourself from that. Mahapatakam, island, is more sinful. You see? It's not saying it's good to eat meat, it's saying if you're so sinful you're going to eat meat, then at least don't eat cow's meat. He wasn't recommending it.
Actually, if the same soul is seeking another form of, suppose in the next life I become a lion, I'll eat meat.
If you become a lion in the next life, it won't be a sin to eat meat. So you want to become a lion in the next life? You could also become a rat. They also eat meat. There's no benefit to be a rat or a lion or even a human being. The real benefit is to go to Krishna. So why don't you act in such a way that you'll go to Krishna, not that you'll come back again?
I just wanted to know that
In the animal forms, there is no new karmic reactions being made. Simply, there is suffering and one burns off karmic reactions. And then one gradually comes to the human form of life and makes a new set of karmic reactions. Unless one becomes Krishna conscious. When the lion eats meat, he doesn't get a sinful reaction for that. So if we like to eat meat, we can become a lion, a tiger, a dog, a cat, a rat, something like this. It's not recommended.
So in one of his conversation with someone, he said that a woman should not work and then be confined to homes.
Did he? Which conversation was that?
I don't remember the exact conversation, but he was talking to a student.
Yeah, well, in general, Prabhupada upheld the... I don't know if he'd use that exact language, confined to the home. But, yeah, generally, Prabhupada was upholding the traditional system that Prabhupada was pointing out the fact which everyone in human society understood until about two generations ago when we became so intelligent, that we changed the whole economic and social system and polluted the world and created so much chaos in the world, that women have certain bodies, they have a certain function of giving birth to children, and they have a certain psychological makeup that they like to look after children. And women all over the world until recently had many children and looked after the children, and that was the important service that they performed. It wasn't the only thing they could do. They did many things in the home and many economic activities in the home also. But generally they were in the home because that's where they're needed to look after the children. But in the modern age, they don't think looking after children is very important. They think better women go out and have a career and the children can come home and take something out of the fridge and watch the TV and play video games and do whatever they like. But there's no mother there to see them. Actually, the men were in the home also. The men also, they didn't also go out to work. The work means they go out to the field, or they'd work at home. A potter would work at home. A brahmana would work. Teacher would, astrologer, they'd be at home, or they'd just be in the village. This whole idea of going out and traveling 50 kilometers to work, coming back 50 kilometers, it's all modern. So, just like this, oh, I'm confined to home. But that's, in the Vedic idea, it's considered a good thing if you can. You don't have to go out. It's a burden to have to go out. Better stay at home. Why do you want to go out? You see, look at that bus. Sunday night, it's completely full of people squashed up in a bus. That's the freedom you want? to squash up in a bumpy, dangerous bus, hot bus every day. What freedom is that? It's better to stay at home, isn't it?
But you say this is a black diamond that they should not be considered equivalent.
Yeah, socially, women's, traditionally, socially, women's roles and men's roles are not equal, no. That's true. And not only women and men, but there's stratification. There's, just like in the modern society, no one's equal either. There's, theoretically, there's equal rights, but some people are more intelligent, some people are richer, some people are more powerful. There's always those who are stronger dominate those who are weaker. So socially, women's position in traditional societies was subordinate to men because it was understood that they need protection so that they can look after children and not be defiled by other men. They're subordinate, yes, but they have protection also, which they don't have in the modern age. The women walk around freely on the street and anyone can just seduce them or rape them. But women who are protected, they have their dignity maintained, preserved. So to be protected, you have to accept some control. But in the modern age, the so-called freedom is considered more important than chastity. It's a difference of values.
Yeah.
Just actually in the last generation, India's changed a lot. Isn't it? Since you were a child, things have changed a lot in the whole social outlook. But it doesn't mean that because in the modern age they talk about freedom and equal rights and that they're right and that the whole history of human society up till now was wrong. That's the propaganda. That everyone was wrong up till now, but why do we have to accept that? They say freedom, rights, but you know, the country which is most promoting that is America. They didn't give the Iraqi people any freedom to choose to be bombed by American bombs. You know, they talk about, I say that Hitler, he was better than George Bush in as much as he just said that we're Germans, we're bastards, and we want to take over Ukraine and Poland and all these countries because we're just nasty, that's all, and we want to occupy them. Whereas George Bush, in the name of freedom and equal rights and humanitarianism, does the same thing. They want to conquer Iraq for their own economic purposes. But instead, they say in the name of humanitarianism and the women don't have equal rights and this and that. But they want it because it's for economic reasons, that's all. So at least Hitler was honest. He just said that we're Germans and we want to dominate these people and we're more powerful, so to hell with you and kick you in the face and kill you. And George Bush does the same thing, but he says it in the name of humanitarianism. That's all. Don't believe all this talk about freedom and equal rights and this and that. There's people who talk like this, they have another agenda. What is the? Ideal situation in this material world, there is no ideal situation. This material world is by nature full of misery. So better get out of it. There's no ideal situation.
We don't belong in
it. That's right, we don't. We belong in the spiritual world with Krishna. But the Varnashram society is the best system for regulating a non-ideal situation. The Varnashram society, which is set up by Krishna, Chato Vanyam Maya Srishtam. But that also, that can be misused. It was misused and therefore the caste system came. But otherwise it's a good system. It just recognizes that different people have different propensities and different roles. You can say everyone's equal and all the same, but anyway, some people are going to take leadership roles, some people are going to be intellectuals, some people are going to be money-minded, and some people, they're going to be bus drivers or whatever. So it's just recognizing that and training people according to their propensities. No one is disrespected. As a matter of fact, you may say, oh, the women didn't have equal rights, but they were respected a lot more than they are in the modern age. So you have free, the women have their so-called freedom, but they're not respected. And why should they be respected if they're going around half naked? Who's going to respect? A woman who is chaste and shy, she will be respected. But in the modern age, they'll say, they'll laugh at her. But for women, the chastity is the greatest quality. Of course, ultimately no one's Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, man, woman, we're all Atma, we're all servants of Krishna. But we have, within human life, we have various social roles to play. Science and technology development is all a big bluff. It's all unnecessary. What do you need? Roti, kapra, makam. These are the basic necessities. Food, clothing and shelter. By Krishna's arrangement, that's all provided by nature. You don't need all this massive technological development. There's so many bad effects. So previously, especially in India, the culture was simple living and high thinking. And now it's extremely complex living and no thinking about the higher values of life. So which is better ultimately? Even in that simple living, people were living more healthy life. The modern age, you can't breathe fresh air. It's all polluted. You can't get fresh food. It's neither fresh nor is it healthy. It's full of poisonous chemicals. And even you can't get even decent drinking water. What a miserable age. You think if you get the bottled water, that'll be better. But it comes in plastic, which is also polluted. It's carcinogenic. It's Bisleri and all this. So what a horrible age we live in. And they call this advanced. And we're so foolish, we believe them. They say we've reduced the disease, but then why are there so many medical students here? If they've reduced the disease. Hospitals are doing good business.
Maharaj, but why are we always focusing on the negative points of technology? Why not on the positive points?
Were you here in the lecture just now? So what was I talking about the negative points of technology? I was praising Krishna, wasn't I? So I'm not all, it's not that we're, because the question came up, therefore we're answering it. And we have to address this because people are bewildered. They're thinking that this is something very good. They don't realize that Krishna is very good. It's not that we only speak bad. Our aim is not to say that technology is very bad. Technology is also not very bad. If it's used in the service of Krishna, all well and good. This microphone is useful if used for Krishna's service. But to think that simply by making more and more technological items, human society, that in itself is the progress of human society. That is a big illusion which everyone is bewildered by. Therefore we need to point that out. But that's not our only aim, is to say that this illusion is all rubbish, but our aim is to glorify Krishna. Which you may remember, just a short time ago, I dedicated 1 hour to glorification of Krishna. So that's our ultimate. But mostly people are not even ready to hear glorification of Krishna because they're enamored by the promise of happiness that will come from sense enjoyment offered by modern technology. So we have to debunk that misconception. That's also there. Any more questions from the ladies' side? Spoiled your careers? I'm seeing that so many women, they remain unmarried till 30 or 40 and then they're just miserable. And they thought, why didn't I get married and have children? Because that comes with the body, it's the psychology. That naturally every girl wants to have children. But in the modern age, you're trained differently. So therefore, you become unhappy. Better get married and have children. And chant Hare Krishna, otherwise it's all useless. Then I couldn't hear because someone's going past on a motorbike. What form does Krishna what? What form? In so many forms. You pray to Krishna and you see how he reciprocates with you. You have to be careful how you pray. If you pray to Krishna, let me have lots of material enjoyment, you might get it, but you might not get love of Krishna. Who was that who was asking about the people who condemn you when you preach? So you can pray to Krishna that please give me the intelligence to speak in such a way that people will accept what I have to say to them. And please, you inspire those people to at least listen to what I have to say. You pray, Krishna will help. But preaching means you have to accept. Many people won't listen. Most people won't take it seriously. That's the austerity of preaching. You can't expect that everyone, as soon as you walk up to them and say, Krishna is the Supreme Lord, they'll all fall at your feet. It's not like that. Preaching is difficult.
Maharaj, when it's about the technology, so we are in such a situation where we are stuck, we can't leave the technology also, but...
You can't leave, so use it in Krishna's service.
Like Maharaj,
you can use the technology in Krishna's service.
Like in my course, I have obstetric posting, and you know, I get to look at women deliver, and that is affecting my sadhana, but I don't know what to do about it. I don't know how, in what frame of mind I should fit as that.
Well, you'll probably get used to it after some time. When you see it enough times, then it'll become a daily activity for you. Just like, you know, doctors see so many deaths. But it's tough. Therefore, the doctors, they either become religious, or drunkards and womanizers, or they become hard-hearted like stone. Isn't it? Three ways doctors react. So better become religious. Actually, traditionally, men wouldn't be present at delivery of children. That's the, what do they call that? The dhai. But they still have in the villages, but they come there drunk, and the tribal women and this and that. So better they have a proper delivery. Well, you could specialize in another field.
Until I won't specialize.
But that you're still doing your primary course. Don't do abortions, just refuse. Serving people is serving Krishna. Well, if you tell them about Krishna, that's serving Krishna. But if you just deliver babies without any giving any knowledge of Krishna, then how is it serving Krishna? Yeah, that's a very good way to serve Krishna. Tell them about Krishna. If you're delivering babies, you can tell the parents that you better teach, give them Bhagavad Gita as it is. Sell it to them and tell them you better teach your children this for their highest benefit. One thing about doctors is that people tend to respect them. So, you can tell people about Krishna from the position of a doctor. They may be more open, especially when their health is affected and they're afraid they may be paralyzed for the rest of their life or they may die. Then they're, as one experienced heart surgeon told me, he said, people treat me like God. So you can take that position to inform people about Krishna. You can go in the hospital, in the wards with tilak on and everything like this. Of course, if you're an employee in a hospital, then it depends where you are. I have one disciple, he's doing physiotherapy, which isn't, I guess that's not a very prestigious field in medicine. But he goes with Tilakam all the time. People know he's a devotee. He's mainly specializing in people who have accidents and this and that, helping them to get back in shape. Although he got into weight reduction, there's a lot more money than that. People who eat too much and then they get fat. Then they come for some exercises. Yeah, then we have another 2 minutes according to my watch. Sorry? Christians say that Jesus is the only way, and Muslims say that Allah is the only way. I had this question when I was a child. I said, Allah, this is very dangerous, you know, that the Catholics say if you don't believe in the Virgin Mary, you go to hell, and the Protestants say if you do believe in the Virgin Mary, you go to hell, and Muslims say, you know, there's Sunni and Shia, and I have no way of understanding because they're all totally dogmatic. And they just say you have to believe us, and if you don't believe us, you go to hell forever. Therefore, I was very satisfied when I met the devotees, and they gave me a proper philosophical understanding that it's not just dogmatism. This is the only, you believe in this, or you go to hell. And what's the reason? No reason. Then why should we accept? If Krishna explains himself in Bhagavad Gita, then why should we just accept someone's dogmatism? The dogmatism of someone who's, you know, what is their religious life? Eating meat and drinking wine, and then why should we accept that that's baby's religion? Just, it's like a child, you know, you tell them, shut up, you don't tell, just shut up or I'll beat you. That's all. So that kind of religion. You believe in this or you go to hell. For them it's good because they don't have any further advancement. With the child, you don't sit down and give him a big course on philosophy. Just keep quiet or I'll slap you. That's all. So it's like that. You believe in this or you go to hell. This is the only way. So it's baby's religion. There's no knowledge of who is God. There's no knowledge of basic sadhachar. There's no knowledge of repeated birth and death. There's no... Where's the philosophy? Why is it that some people are born in a rich family, good-looking, healthy, and some people are born crippled in a poor family? Why? They have no explanation. Jesus is the only way. Then why? And if you don't believe in Jesus, you go to hell forever. Then why are some people born in a family in a Buddhist country where they're not at all inclined, they never heard of Christianity? So they're condemned to go to hell from the beginning? Doesn't make any sense, does it? I was raised as a Christian, but it didn't make any sense. So when I was about 12 years old, I realized none of this makes any sense. They say, if you don't believe in the all-merciful God, if you don't believe in Him, He burns you in hell forever. What kind of all-merciful God is that? Doesn't make any sense. Jesus comes to judge, and then the majority of them He sends to burn in hell forever. Fortunately, I have enough faith in God to accept that He's not so merciless. Actually, if God's actually like that, I'd rather go to hell. I'll burn in hell rather than be with such a nasty God. Better be in hell. What do you want to be with that guy? It's actually, in the name of religion and belief in God, they're actually blaspheming Him by ascribing to Him such cruel personality. You can't tell them that because they're fanatics. They don't have any philosophy. But it doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Ah, what is surrendering to Krishna? Were you here in the lecture? Were you there in the lecture just now? So I described the six the six characteristics of Sharanagati. I won't say it again, but you can find it described here in Bhagavad Gita chapter 18, text 66 purport. You'll find there the six characteristics of Sharanagati, which means surrender. You'll find it right there.
What is karma?
What is karma? Kim karma? That Arjuna asks. Well, the word, it has different meanings in different contexts. Basically, it means work. Karma means work. Karma also, yeah, in different contexts. Generally, it means work which produces reactions. But there's also karma performed for Krishna, that's bhakti. The basic meaning is work. That's all. And then there's karma phal. You get the result of everything we do has a result.
So, in this looking over the karma name, and the same,
yeah. This literally means you have a right to work, but you should not be attached to the result of the work. That's the. It's not the ultimate instruction in Bhagavad Gita, but it is in the chapter on Karma Yoga. It's there. Later, Krishna describes Mat Karma Krin, work for me. That's on a higher level.
Work for only Krishna, or work is something.
Working for, there's different levels. Mat Karma Krin means working for Krishna. There's also Yat Karoshi, Yad Ashnasi, Yanchu Hoshi, Dadasi, Yat Tapasasi, Konte, Yat Tat Kurushva Madarpana. That whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever religious activities you perform, whatever austerities you do, that should be done as an offering to Krishna. So that's a step down. The highest karma is doing what Krishna wants us to do for him. Then a step down is doing what we want to do, but within Shastric injunctions and offering the result to Krishna. Then another level is just doing what we want to do without any thought of Krishna, without following any Shastra. So that's Vikarma or Pap. Do you all have this Bhagavad Gita? Some of you don't have. If you don't have, please get it and read it. Seems like you're mostly doctors here, is it? Aspiring doctors, engineers. So you're reading big fat books. And there's so many complex things. Why don't you read this Bhagavad Gita? Get this Bhagavad Gita also and read it. I don't know. I think engineers don't read as much as doctors, is it? What does engineer mean? Nowadays, there's no engines. Most of the engineers don't have anything to do with engines. Sitting in front of a computer all day. Civil engineers also. Well, I guess you use engines to build bridges and things. This is Yantra Vidya. The Sanskrit word for technology is Yantra Vidya. So that's considered pretty low class in Vedic terminology. That's because in the Vedic system, they would do by mantra, not by yantra. It's very gross, actually. Anyway, those days are gone. Even this medicine, this system, this Western system of medicine is very gross. Just giving some chemicals which grossly alter the organic system, the whole, huh? Not exactly physiology, I can't remember the word. It's very gross medicines. It's, you know, you give some antibiotic, you kill everything in the body, you kill the antibodies and you just destroy all of everything, so there's no resistance left. So, traditional medicines are more subtle. They take some time to heal, but they don't have all these bad side effects. Mostly based on herbal cures. Everything's there in nature. And many of the modern medicines there anyway, they were first discovered from herbal sources, and then they extract the active component. But if it's in the original herbal source, then by God's arrangement, then instead of giving you an overdose of the active ingredient, it gives you the right dose with all the other ingredients which offset the reactions also. Anyway, that's another big story. You won't be happy if I tell you what a big hoax modern medicine is. I'm sorry I couldn't hear again. Please say it. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear. There's so much echo. Maybe my hearing's becoming poor also. Can you repeat that?
Many a time we come across a situation where there's a choice to make, but we are not sure if Maya is alluring us or it's Krishna who is giving us the opportunity.
How to choose in various situations. Therefore, one should learn how to act. Every civilized human being should have a guru. You should learn how to act according to Shastra and how to apply that practically in life. One has to learn. One cannot be with the guru always, but remembering the instructions and the example, then we have to make decisions. Without that, then you're a vagabond. You don't know what to do. All right, we'll finish there. One more question? No?
Yeah.
Is it mentioned anywhere in the scriptures that women can't take initiation? In the Smarta Vidhi, they are barred from certain kinds of initiation. In Goswami Vidhi or Vaishnava Vidhi, they are not bad. There are certain kinds of Vedic sacrifices. Actually, the women don't take initiation, but they participate with their husbands. Because in the Vedic system, for women, the marriage is considered equal to Diksha. The young boy will study as a brahmachari in the Gurukul. Then he'll get married. Then what he learned, he has to teach his wife. So that's why it said Pati Guru. It's not just he orders you around, he has to teach the wife also. So for the woman, that is... See, there are different kinds of Diksha. There are Dikshas for a sacrifice. But to be in a sacrifice, a man has to be there with his wife also. So, many times, in many instances, they don't take formal Diksha because they are considered one with their husband. So he formally takes it and they assist. But this is quite a complex subject actually, but in the Pancharatriki Vidhi, or the Vaishnav system current at the present time, women also take initiation. They chant mantras, not Vedic mantras. We also don't chant Vedic mantras, except the Gayatri mantra and the Hare Krishna mantra. But we chant Pancharatriki mantras. According to Smarta Vidhi, women cannot worship Shalagram Shila. According to Goswami Vidhi, they can. They can't directly worship, they can assist only. According to... Anyway, it's a long, complex subject. It's not something we want to discuss at length now. Yeah.
Maharaj, I was telling my mother not to cook food with onions, garlic, and she started saying that it's used in Ayurveda as medicine. And
oh yes, in Ayurveda you'll find onions, garlic, wine, meat, all kinds of things. But not everything's meant for everybody.
I don't know what to do when I go back home.
When you go back home, don't eat onions and garlic. You can tell your mother it's true that that's in Ayurveda, but that's not everything's meant for everybody. Vaishnavas don't take onions and garlic. Not everything in scripture is meant for everybody. You can tell her that Draupadi had 5 husbands, that's also why. So why doesn't she marry another 4 husbands? Not everything is for everybody.